Yesterday, I got to meet a really cool woman named Virginia who took me to see a great blue heron rookery in the Kenosha Wildlife Management Area. She was there last weekend with someone who counted 55 of their conspicuous and somehow improbable stick nests. From a distance, a heronry has something of the silhouette of a Dr. Seuss forest of truffula trees, since the nests are large and constructed near the tops of bare trees. Sometimes it's hard to notice the herons atop the nests unless you look very carefully. The birds are still in the process of building and repairing, so a couple of males were flying with sticks. I can sort of figure out how they find and pick up sticks, and it's easy to see how they carry them in their beaks to their nest tree. What I can't figure out is how the females manage, using no tools except their exceptionally long beak and their gangly feet, to build a structurally sound nest that is completely exposed to the elements, but not only holds together, but also supports up to 4 growing baby herons and their parents. The two sexes have specific duties when it comes to nest building, but both parents incubate the eggs and feed the babies. Like osprey, bald eagles, and puffins, herons must fly away from the nest site to good fishing areas and carry the fish back to the babies. But unlike osprey and bald eagles, herons lack talons to carry the fish, and unlike puffins, they don't have a serrated bill that would allow them to carry fish that way. So they swallow their catch on their fishing grounds and fly back to the nest. The babies tap on their bills, which releases a gag reflex of sorts, and the adults feed the babies by regurgitation. Just hearing about this seems to release a gag reflex in some squeamish people, but really this system solves an otherwise difficult problem while making the food softer and easier for the baby herons to digest. We people do much the same thing for our babies, only using a blender rather than our stomachs. Heronries can last for many decades, which at least minimizes the amount of time each year that birds spend building. Most pairs need only repair old nests. Even though the same birds return to the same rookeries, they don't necessarily return to the same nests or the same mates. Studies of banded birds indicate that there's quite a bit of mixing from one year to the next. Their nests sometimes attract other birds searching for nest sites, especially ospreys and great horned owls. A friend of mine watched a rookery over a season when a great horned owl had appropriated one of the nests. The heron spent so much time and energy harassing the owl, apparently trying to drive it away, that not one of their nests succeeded, nor did the owls. Osprey are at least off their nest enough during daylight hours that the herons could concentrate on their own nests more of the time. The word heronry is technically a bit more accurate than the word rookery to describe one of these nesting areas. Rookery was originally coined as the word for where relatives of crows and ravens called rooks nest. But using the word heronry can often lead to awkward constructions. You can't call this a great blue heronry unless you mean that the trees and nests are large and blue. You could call it a great blue heron heronry, but that sounds redundant. So calling it a great blue heron rookery is simpler, even if slightly less correct. Robert Butler, who wrote the Great Blue Heron entry for the Birds of North America, skirted the entire issue by simply calling them nesting colonies. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.